Part 3. You will hear two geography students, Adam and Michelle, talking about a volcanic eruption which took place in Iceland in 1783. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 26. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 26.
So, Michelle, shall we make a start on our presentation? We haven't got that much time left.
No, Adam, but at least we've done all the background reading. I found it really interesting. I'd never even heard of the Laki eruption before this.
Me neither. I suppose 1783 is a long time ago.
But it was a huge eruption, and it had such devastating consequences.
I know. It was great there were so many primary sources to look at. It really gives you a sense of how catastrophic the volcano was. People were really trying to make sense of the science for the first time.
That's right. But what I found more significant was how it impacted directly and indirectly on political events, as well as having massive social and economic consequences.
I know. That should be the main focus of our presentation.
The observations made by people at the time were interesting, weren't they? I mean, they all gave a pretty consistent account of what happened, even if they didn't always use the same terminology.
Yeah. I was surprised there were so many weather stations established by that time. So, you know, you can see how the weather changed often by the hour.
Right. Writers at the time talked about the Laki haze to describe the volcanic fog that spread across Europe. They all realised that this wasn't the sort of fog they were used to. And, of course, this was in pre-industrial times, so they hadn't experienced sulphur-smelling fog before.
No, that's true.
Reports from the period blamed the haze for an increase in headaches, respiratory issues and asthma attacks. And they all describe how it covered the sun and made it look a strange red colour.
Must have been very weird.
It's interesting that Benjamin Franklin wrote about the haze. Did you read that? He was the American ambassador in Paris at the time.
Yeah. At first, no one realised that the haze was caused by the volcanic eruption in Iceland.
It was Benjamin Franklin who realised that before anyone else.
He's often credited with that, apparently. But a French naturalist beat him to it. I can't remember his name. I'd have to look it up. Then other naturalists had the same idea, all independently of each other.
Oh, right. We should talk about the immediate impact of the eruption, which was obviously enormous, especially in Iceland, where so many people died.
You'd expect that. And the fact that the volcanic ash drifted so swiftly, but not that the effects would go on for so long. Or that 2 years after the eruption, strange weather events were being reported as far away as North America and North Africa.
No, I found all that hard to believe too. It must have been terrible. And there was nothing anyone could do about it, even if they knew the ash cloud was coming in their direction.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 15 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 15 to 20.
Of course, mushroom picking is associated with the countryside, but if you haven't got a car, your local park can be a great place to start. There are usually a range of habitats where mushrooms grow, such as playing fields and wooded areas. But you need to be there first thing in the morning, as there's likely to be a lot of competition. Not just from people, but wildlife too. The deer often get the best mushrooms in my local park. If you're a complete beginner, I wouldn't recommend going alone or relying on photos in a book, even the one I've written. There are some really good phone apps for identifying mushrooms, but you can't always rely on getting a good signal in the middle of a wood. If possible, you should go with a group led by an expert. You'll stay safe and learn a lot that way. Conservation is a really important consideration, and you must follow a few basic rules. You should never pick all the mushrooms in one area. Collect only enough for your own needs. Be very careful that you don't trample on young mushrooms or other plants. And make sure you don't pick any mushrooms that are endangered and protected by law. There's been a decline in some varieties of wild mushrooms in this part of the country. Restaurants are becoming more interested in locally sourced food like wild mushrooms. But the biggest problem is that so many new houses have been built in this area in the last 10 years. And more water is being taken from rivers and reservoirs because of this, and mushroom habitats have been destroyed. Anyway, a word of advice on storing mushrooms. Collect them in a brown paper bag, and as soon as you get home, put them in the fridge. They'll be fine for a couple of days, but it's best to cook them as soon as possible, after washing them really carefully first, of course. So, everybody knows what a mushroom tastes like, right? Well, you'll be surprised by the huge variety of wild mushrooms there are. Be adventurous. They're great in so many dishes. Stir-fries, risottos, pasta. But just be aware that some people can react badly to certain varieties, so it's a good idea not to eat huge quantities to begin with. OK, so now I'm going to show you a few examples of poisonous mushrooms.
That is the end of part two. You now have 30 seconds to check your answers to part two.